Good morning and welcome to the Lodestar podcast news in brief. Thank you very much for joining me today. We are going to be rounding up the supply chain news for week 21. It's not surprising that for the last few weeks, we've been very focused on tariffs in the US market and de minimis changes, because that's had a huge impact on the overall market in terms of demand and rates. I'm now joined by Alex Linnane. And Alex, you reported from a slightly different angle last week that tariffs and e-commerce had been in the legal spotlight on both sides of the Atlantic. So what are the details here and where is this story headed?
Hi, Charlotte. Well, yeah, wherever Trump goes, lawyers follow, really. So last week we saw that an auto parts retailer has taken the de minimis exemption ban to the Court of International Trade. And they've argued that Trump has overstepped his remit. The retailer said that most of their business will be gone by the end of June and that the administration hasn't sufficiently studied the economic impact on companies. Now, alongside that, there are also 12 states suing Trump, again claiming he has overreached his authority. And the states have argued that the IEPPA, which is the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, doesn't authorize the use of tariffs. And even if it did, the trade deficit, which Trump has said is an emergency, has existed for 49 consecutive years, so is not quite the unusual and extraordinary threat that it would need to be to use the IEPPA. In response, the administration is citing Richard Nixon's emergency use of tariffs in the 1971 economic crisis. But I mean, to be honest, overall, everyone thinks it's going to end up in the Supreme Court. And I'm sure that there'll be more and more court cases surrounding this. Like I said, lawyers follow Trump. Over in the EU, there's a slightly different vibe. There are plans afoot to change de minimis rules. The idea is to create an EU market surveillance authority and charge a €2 per parcel processing fee. Mind you, this is only a proposal right now. But the EU's main concerns are the quality of e-commerce coming in. So in one case, it looked at a load of shipments and 100% of the shipments, which was from one of the major Chinese platforms, were of insufficient quality to be sold in the EU, so are effectively illegal in the EU. So they're quite worried about that. They're also worried about EU businesses competing against all these cheap imports. But, you know, much like in America, they also have to be aware that many of those businesses will be using Chinese parts and therefore going to want to retain access to them. So the €2 per parcel seems to me a lot better than $100 per parcel, which is what's currently in the US. Although the EU has said that individual member states may be able to add more charges of their own if their cost for processing turns out to be higher.
Yeah, there's lots of moving parts to this, and the market is changing very, very drastically and very rapidly at the moment. But obviously, it's very sad for businesses. Like you say, this has put a huge dent in demand volumes. But we did report last week the reduction from 145% tariffs from the US to China to 30%, and the cut in de minimis fees from 120% of the value of the item to now 54% had offered a slight reprieve to this demand slump. According to Cirrus Global Advisors, half of the Trans-Pacific flights that had exited the market after the 2nd of May are now flying again. But they did say that much of this capacity that has returned is suspected to be carrying the pent-up demand of traditional air freight that had been paused during the 145% tariff environment of the kind of wait-and-see tactic, rather than a return of cross-border e-commerce, which they said had not bounced back very well. Alex, what are you hearing about all of this?
I think one of the main things to note is that we've all been fixated on the sort of 30% tariff, but in fact, there are still many, many, many goods that are paying just considerably more than 30%. I think that's one thing to note. So it's not a blanket 30%. And for each good, it's slightly different. So that's going to affect sort of overall demand. One interesting thing that I heard on Friday, Eva Air told its shareholders that e-commerce demand has not disappeared. But it also said that it expects to see a bump in demand in July, which the summer isn't generally very good for air freight. It thinks that shippers are going to move from sea freight to air freight because of delivery windows causing sort of customs bottlenecks, which are going to frustrate shippers and shift volumes, they believe. I haven't really heard this much from anyone else, but then a US air freight wholesaler just told me that no matter how you twist and turn it, this is all creating huge disruptions to the supply chains at large, and it will create bottlenecks where air freight all of a sudden will be the only solution. So perhaps there is something to look forward to for airlines. We'll have to wait and see on that.
Similarly, on the ocean side, we also reported that the 90-day lowering of the US tariffs on Chinese imports acted as the starting gun for businesses to ship as many goods as possible. That was according to Zenitor. And they questioned just how high the rates would go as a result of this, as carriers rushed to announce GRIs, that's general rate increases, for the 1st of June. And it said, carriers do not need a second invitation to introduce surcharges in response to situations that cause a squeeze on capacity. And this puts shippers in a difficult position. So obviously, these GRIs will take a while to trickle through and they might not even stick. But what are we seeing with the ocean rates currently, Gav?
Well, I mean, sometimes the GRIs stick immediately, as we saw the week before, you know, when there was that 16% increase to the West Coast and 20% increase to the US East Coast from Asia. So this week, following no GRIs, actually things have been rather flat. WTI's rate for the West Coast from Asia is up 4% to the East Coast. You sort of see that absent some external pricing increase mechanism applied by the carriers, the demand and supply are roughly in balance. Europe's just flat as a skillet. Flat is a flat thing, being really flat. But there have been other movements, actually, that we saw. Both the Shanghai Containerized Freight Index and the Ningbo, the lesser-known Ningbo Containerized Freight Index, both saw very sharp increases on the Asia to South America West Coast trade, up 50% week on week in for the SCFI and up 70% week on week at the NCFI. The guys in Ningbo told me that this was largely due to tightened capacity on routes into South America. There were all these blankings and tonnage redeployments. And of course, carriers, the easiest place to redeploy North Trans-Pacific services literally to the South Trans-Pacific. So they were redeploying that tonnage there, and then suddenly they took it away again to go back to the US. And that seems to have had a very significant weekly impact on sort of importers down in Latin America.
Now a little look into the Red Sea situation. And last week, Yemen's Iran-backed Houthi militia stated that a maritime navigation prohibition to and from the port of Haifa has been officially imposed, and any violation would result in carriers and their fleets being listed on the Houthi sanctions list, prohibited from transiting the Red Sea, Bab el-Mandeb Strait, Gulf of Aden, Arabian Sea, and Indian Ocean, rendering them targets for attack anywhere. This is a response to Israel's horrific actions in Gaza. Obviously, this is a big step back because if you remember, US President Donald Trump had said this month that the group had agreed to suspend its target of US ships transiting the Red Sea. But again, this whole thing just reaffirms that carriers will not begin regular transits until the situation is a lot more stable. But Gav, you reported last week that this has not deterred one carrier in particular. Can you give us some details?
So the analysts at Easy sent me a note detailing that they had noticed that the 16,000 TEU CMA CGM Jules Verne has booked a southbound Suez transit for the 21st of June. The ship is deployed on one of the Ocean Alliance's Asia Mediterranean routes. And what appears to be happening, and it's still, I must emphasize, it's very much in its sort of nascent stage at the moment, is that CMA has decided to sort of test the water with the Red Sea transits by sending some of these Asian Med ships on their backhaul through Suez rather than going around the Cape of Good Hope. I mean, obviously, the fuel savings enormous. And also, there's just simply not so much cargo on board, and the cargo that is on board isn't anywhere as near as valuable. I say this is an Ocean Alliance service, so I should know also that the specific Ocean Alliance service to which that ship is deployed, I think it was 15 ships, but all of them are CMA vessels, so it doesn't appear to be something that its Ocean Alliance partners, they don't seem to share the same confidence that CMA has. It was only a few weeks ago that we saw CMA CGM Chief Exec Rodolfo Saad in the White House unveiling a $20 billion investment package in the year. You know, at what point do the Houthis think, no, you've got too many eggs in the US basket, they're going to start attacking CMAC Egypt? I don't know. Anyway, they seem to think it's all right at the moment. Perhaps they have some sort of behind-the-scenes assurances that their vessels won't be fired upon.
And while we're on the topic of CMA-CGM, Alex, back to you. You reported on their Q1 results last week. Anything interesting there?
Well, not in the actual results themselves. No, there never is. CMA-CGM releases its results at about 5 p.m. on a Friday in Europe, which is totally annoying for all journalists involved, I can tell you that. And then when they do release them, they tell you almost nothing. So CMA declared a 4.2% volume growth in the shipping line, which amazingly was exactly the same figure released by CTS earlier, saying that that was the market average. I don't know. It's just so precise. We're marginally suspicious. We have absolutely no idea how CMA, CGM Air Cargo is doing, or CV Logistics, really, because they bunch in so many other things into their results. And again, it's not something we can check as a private company. They can do what they like. So overall, I don't think we've learned an awful lot from CMA's results, although just very vaguely in shipping, the results look similar to Maersk, as they would do. That's all I've got on that, really.
While we're doing results, Gav, are you able to wrap up insight from ocean carrier Zim last week? Obviously, they are an Israeli carrier, making them a constant target for Houthi sanctions. CEO Eli Glickman had told the Lodestar that Zim would face a double hit to its earnings, competing against carriers who might opt for Suez transit. I mean, no one's really doing this en masse at the moment, but Gav, what were their results like for the time being?
Well, they were very good. I mean, they had a 12% volume growth in the first quarter. It was like 12% compared to the market average of 4.2. So that's three times the market. And without question, the best performer of the listed carriers. Freight rates, I think, were up something like 20% odd year on year. So yeah, they had a good quarter, but I didn't do the interview with them. Our news editor, Alex Whiteman, interviewed, and he came away with the feeling that they're pretty concerned about the rest of the year. You know. But then again, who isn't? We reported on Zim restarting its ZX2 service, which runs it's like a Xiamen, Ningbo, Los Angeles run. The reason why we reported it was because it's kind of bellwether service. We thought if that one gets reinstated, then it's probably likely that the rest will follow, because Zim do tend to move very quickly on these opportunities. And lo and behold, it did transpire. I mean, by the end of the week, Linalytica was reporting that all of the suspended Trans-Pacific services had been reactivated. This is causing waves in other trades, if you forgive the pun. I mean, you do have to wonder what the point of it all is. Yeah. I mean, you introduce these tariffs, carrier scrap services, redeploy them to other trades, you dent the effect of the tariffs, everyone rushes back again. At the end of the day, where have we got to? Rates are still about the same as they were. I mean, just going around in circles, Charlotte.
Another thing that has been ongoing and is causing ripples throughout the supply chain is North Europe port congestion. I'm going to give you a quick update here. This is unfortunately still an issue. In a European freight market update, Flexport said there is an average of about 5 to 6 days congestion depending on the port. And at the moment, there was little alternative for European importers who could usually use the Mediterranean ports as a tool to avoid congestion in North Europe. But that was at a time when you were transiting the Suez Canal. But due to the Red Sea situation, this benefit's not really there, because then you also have the longer transit times around the Med. I mean, Maersk also put an advisory last week. Bremerhaven in Germany had experienced a sharp and unexpected decline in labour availability during national holidays. And although it does account for seasonal variations in its planning, the scale of this year's reduction had exceeded their forecasts. And there are additional holidays approaching. So Maersk estimated that terminal productivity is expected to return to normal levels at the end of May, which is quite soon. So fingers crossed we see improvements.
Yeah, European port congestion is one of the key hot topics that we're monitoring at the moment. And although we are seeing this, it hasn't really filtered through. What normally happens is that this would then filter through to freight rates. Yeah, because congestion would cause problems, it causes equipment shortages, it causes panic. and it causes a surge in demands, and so you get higher freight rates. And we haven't seen that yet. So it's quite interesting this year, because I think we're going to be able to start charting the time lag between how congestion mounts up and then how it filters through to pricing. That's
really interesting, and perhaps one to add to the stories for next. Thank you very much, Gav.
You're very welcome, Charlotte.
Okay, so I think that is about it for last week. And looking forward to this week, it is a bank holiday in England on Monday the 26th of May. So we're not going to be putting out any editorial coverage on Monday, but for the rest of this week, it is business as usual. On Tuesday, the European Shippers Council is hosting a webinar on trade wars. And so this is going to be a deeper dive into the European and US trade relationship. Our news editor, Alex Whiteman, is going to be speaking to Rohit about tariffs and reshaping supply chains. So we will also have some more insight on tariffs and trade policy. And of course, we are approaching the Transport Logistic and Air Cargo Europe conferences in Munich. This is next week from the 2nd to the 5th of June, but please do contact me or someone from the Loadstar if you are going to be there and want to have a chat. I'm also looking to record a podcast from the trade show floor, so do keep an eye out for that on the week after next. I'm hoping it's going to be a very jam-packed episode. Thank you so much for joining me this week, and thanks as always to Alex and Gav for their help.